Okay, so my mic was muted the entire time, so let me do the intro all over again. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the newest edition of the Peyton Doyle Show. I'm Peyton Doyle. Yes, I've been talking with my mic muted the entire time. What a wild start to the show. The reason why I was 30 minutes late, I explained while my mic was muted, was because the camera broke. The camera was broken. I'm using my backup camera, so here we are. Now my mic is working as well. So let's go. Let's get into the show. I said earlier, while my mic was muted, Dwayne Marcus will be coming on later as a guest host of Goat Talk with Marcus. He's going to be talking about the crazy and wild NBA playoffs and the even wilder NFL draft. I'm going to be talking mostly about the draft today. So let's get into it. Let's stop wasting time here since I'm already late. This year was one of the most unpredictable drafts of all time. These were some of my biggest takeaways from it. This was an unpredictable draft. But I do want to say I was wrong about a lot of things in the NFL draft this year. I was, I was wrong about Kenny Pickett going sixth to the Carolina Panthers. I was wrong about Aiden Hutchinson being taken number one overall. And I was wrong about four quarterbacks being drafted in the first round. In fact, there was only one quarterback drafted within the top two. But this was my biggest takeaway of them all because I got it right. I spoke about this 2 weeks ago when Denzel Ward signed a huge contract that made him the highest paid corner in the history of the NFL. Everyone on earth was absolutely freaking out about this deal. I said, hold on, guys. Listen, let's think about this real quick. Okay, so this is a passing league. Quarterback contracts have been going up exponentially in the last 5 years. This offseason, the wide receiver market has been booming. Now, what does that mean? Who's next? The value of quarterbacks, they are going to go up. That's what's next. The value of quarterbacks are going to skyrocket within the next few years. And my theory was validated by the actions of the NFL GMs. Two cornerbacks were drafted in the top four. This is something that has not happened since the modern draft era. So since 1967, two cornerbacks have never gone in the top four until now. Why is that? As quarterbacks become increasingly more valuable, receivers will see their pay increase as well as cornerbacks. In fact, 36 cornerbacks were drafted in this year's draft. That is more than any other position in this year's draft. Also, the impact of the modern-day passing game didn't just have an impact on the draft there. Look at the top picks in this year's draft. It went edge rusher, cornerback, pass protector, wide receiver. It wasn't until the Eagles drafted Jordan Davis at 13th overall that a draft pick that isn't a pass rusher, pass defender, or pass catcher was drafted. Even in a year where there was only one quarterback taken in not only the first round, but the first two rounds, the passing game itself was clearly the main focus of NFL GMs across the league. So the draft is an optimistic time for any team. It brings hope to all franchises across the league, whether your team picked up the highly coveted first round stud or if you guys got the late round gem that everyone overlooked. Every team has a little hope that their team got the guy that is going to put them over the top. These are the teams that I think gave their fans the most to be excited about in the draft this weekend. At number five, to start off, I think the Detroit Lions had an incredibly slept-on draft. The Lions were gifted Aiden Hutchinson at number two overall. Let me get this banner out of the way real quick. The Lions were gifted Aiden Hutchinson, the Michigan native, at number two overall after Jacksonville decided to go with Trevon Walker out of Georgia with the number one overall pick. Hutchinson is the one player in this draft that has the highest floor. He is expected to be at minimum a 10 sack per season kind of guy. So I say great pick there. But then they did something that was very unexpected and traded up into the first round. The Lions jumped 20 picks from 32nd to 12th. And this is the part where it got scary. This is the part where I thought everyone on earth had to be thinking, you traded up 20 spots in the first round. Here we go. The Lions are going to draft the quarterback. This is going to be the first domino in the quarterback chain that's going to start these quarterbacks to start falling off the board. But they didn't. They did not take a quarterback. They actually took a wide receiver. They traded up 20 spots for a wide receiver. Does that show increasing in the positional value of wide receivers? I think so. They drafted Jameson Williams out of Alabama, which I think is a fantastic pick. The Lions added Williams to a receiver room that also includes Amon-Ra St. Brown, who he really came on towards the end of the year last year and showed a lot of promise and a lot of upside. And DJ Chark, who when healthy is a pretty good and underrated receiver. They also have TJ Hockenson at tight end, who's a pretty good pass catcher. Then in the later rounds, the Lions continued to address players to plug holes in that defense, which had a lot of holes these past few years. But I think probably the best part of the Lions' whole draft is that they did not try to roll the dice on any of these quarterbacks, and they didn't gamble on a rookie quarterback. I think that was brilliant. They realized that they have a lot more to focus on than trying to develop a long-shot rookie quarterback. Plus, one thing an organization can never do is draft a quarterback as the future of their franchise without being 100% sure that that is their guy. If you are 99% sure that he is your guy and he's a quarterback, don't draft him because he's not worth it. I love that the Lions are staying patient during this rebuilding process, knowing that none of these quarterbacks were truly worth a high draft pick, and also having the self-awareness to know there's other issues on that roster that need to be addressed first. So good job, Lions. I feel like nobody gives the Lions enough love, enough credit throughout the entire NFL. So I'm going to be the one to do that, even though it's always going to bite me in the behind later because it is the Lions. But listen, I'm used to it because I've been a Browns fan my whole life. I'm used to exactly that. At number four, I have the Philadelphia Eagles. The reason why I can't put them higher is because I actually don't think that they had a great draft overall. And I know on the graphic, it says the Eagles are at three. Listen, it has been a long morning. It has been a long, long morning with a lot of difficulties. But I have the Eagles at four, not three. And the reason why is because I don't feel like their draft overall was that great. Jordan Davis seems like he's the heir apparent to Fletcher Cox in the middle of that defense, which I thought was a solid pick, but not necessarily a great one. But I do think they got an absolute steal by drafting N'Kobe Dean in the middle of the third round. A lot of scouts had a first-round grade on N'Kobe Dean, and he was projected to go in the mid-first round. However, he had an injury in his pectoral and shoulder region, and he declined to have surgery on the injury. And by doing so, he has increased the amount of doubt surrounding him and increased the amount of time it will take him to fully recover from the injury. So that made a lot of teams shy away from him, thus leading to N'Kobe Dean sliding all the way until the middle of the third round where the Eagles drafted him, which I think is a great value pick at that point in the draft. But the main reason why the Eagles are on here is because of a player that they didn't even draft. The Eagles made a huge splash when trading for former Titans star wide receiver A.J. Brown. And guess what, Jalen Hurts? This is your prove it year. It is time to prove it, so be ready. The Eagles made the playoffs last year under the first year of Nick Sirianni. Now the front office went out and got A.J. Brown to pair alongside Devontae Smith, and that is going to be a great young duo right there for Jalen Hurts to throw to. But now what's brilliant is the Eagles are making it much easier for Jalen Hurts to succeed and much harder for him to come up with an excuse if he doesn't succeed. Now at number three, I have the Baltimore Ravens. The Ravens didn't really make any huge splashes in this draft or anything such as that, but they did draft a lot of good players that fit what their style is. The Ravens have always had a unique style. They've been different. Much like their first draft pick of the weekend, Kyle Hamilton, a truly unique player. almost too unique that teams decided to pass on him because they didn't know exactly what to do with him and where exactly he would fit in an NFL defense. Kyle Hamilton fell into the whole safeties have no positional value and that he wasn't that impressive at the combine issue. In terms of production, however, he was a top five prospect. I don't care what his 40 time says. I want you to tell me what his film tells me, because guess what? At Notre Dame, he gave opposing offenses fits and nightmares. And I think the Ravens got a great value pick in the middle of the first round in Kyle Hamilton and a guy that fits their system on defense very well. Then on top of that, they drafted Tyler Linderbaum, who many consider to be one of the best centers to come out in the last 5 to 10 years. And how great of a pick is that for a team that is one of the most run-heavy offenses in the entire league? Then on top of that, they took a chance on Michigan edge rusher David Ojabo, who tore his Achilles during his pro day. And I hope I didn't butcher his name there. But if it wasn't for him tearing his Achilles during his pro day, would have probably been a top 20 pick in this year's draft. But due to the injury concern, he fell all the way to the second round where the Ravens decided to take him. And I think it's going to pay out immensely for the Ravens. Another great draft by Baltimore. They got rid of Barquise Brown, which was kind of weird, but they didn't draft a wide receiver to replace him, which was even weirder. That is the only reason I can't put them higher, is because of the concerns at receiver. But guess what? Their offense, they're not shooting for a star wide receiver. They're shooting for an unconventional kind of offense in this day and age of passing that I was talking about earlier. They want to be a run-first team, and they're clearly shooting for a specific identity that doesn't involve a star wide receiver. So because of that, I think they got guys that fit their identity as opposed to what the NFL mold is trying to tell them to do, which I love. Now, at number two, I have the New York Giants, mainly because of what they did in the first round, because I was not overly impressed as to what they did in the later rounds of the draft. But I think it's okay because they hit two absolute home runs in the first round. Evan Neal is going to be a great offensive tackle in this league, and the Giants absolutely needed to get an anchor on that line to protect Daniel Jones and to also block for Saquon Barkley in the run game. That is extremely important, and they filled a great and big gap there on that line. But the pick that made that draft great, the pick that made the draft great for the Giants and that everyone is going to look back on in 10 years, I am super excited about Kayvon Thibodeau, and I'm saying this right now. Kayvon Thibodeau will be a star in this league, and put it in the books. Put it in the books right now. Look at me right now. I am telling you right here, right now, on May 4th of 2022, Kayvon Thibodeau will win Defensive Rookie of the Year this year. And wait, there's more. I'm so high on Kayvon Thibodeau that I'll even say this. In about 5 years, everyone will look back on this draft and say, wow, Jacksonville should have taken him number one overall. How did they let that guy slide? I am that high on him. I understand that he missed games this season with an ankle injury, but that doesn't seem to be a chronic issue for him. In fact, the reason that Thibodeau slid reportedly doesn't have as much to do with what he does on the field, but rather what he does off it. Does he love football, is what people ask. Every year, there is one guy who gets the "does he love football" treatment. In recent memory, the media tried doing this to Myles Garrett, didn't work. They're still trying to do it to Kyler Murray, not really working. And they did it to Micah Parsons last year and also Justin Fields, which led to them kind of sliding in that year's draft. Does he love football? That's the reason why he fell? Because teams are worried that he might have other interests off the field? It happens every single year. Scouts, GMs, they all tend to overthink when it comes to stuff like that. It's not like Thibodeau is getting into trouble off the field. He's not getting caught up in things that he shouldn't be. He's just a normal dude who has hobbies aside from his job. But trust me, listen, Jacksonville, Detroit, Houston, and the Jets, the players that they might have drafted might turn out to be great players. But the argument for the rest of time is going to be, yeah, But they could have had Kayvon Thibodeau, though. At number one, the best overall draft, I have the other New York team, the New York Jets. While the Jets may have passed on the best player in this year's draft, they did have the best overall draft of any team this year. How could they not, though? They had three first-round picks. It's almost impossible to screw that up. They decided to draft cornerback Sauce Gardner out of Cincinnati, the guy who notoriously gave up zero touchdowns during his college career. Sauce is an absolute glove in single coverage, which really will go a long way to helping the Jets. Defense that has a lot of holes that absolutely got picked apart last year, especially in that secondary. They also drafted arguably the best wide receiver in the draft with the 10th pick in Garrett Wilson, which will certainly help that offense in a division where you have Tyreek Hill, in a division where you have Stephon Diggs. Now you have Elijah Moore and you have Garrett Wilson to pair along with Elijah Moore, a nice young wide receiver duo. Elijah Moore showed a lot of promise towards the end of the season, and now adding Garrett Wilson will certainly help evenly divide the attention from opposing defenses. Then their true value pick, though, this was the pick that was most interesting. It was in the late first round, taking edge rusher Jermaine Johnson out of Florida State, who ended up falling all the way to the 26th pick in the first round. He was Daniel Jeremiah's 9th overall prospect, and there was a lot of buzz that he was going to be drafted in the top 15 picks. However, he slid all the way until the back end of the first round, and the Jets traded back into the first round to get him. Robert Saleh is going to love having an athletic edge rusher like Jermaine Johnson, and I'm honestly surprised that he fell that late in the first round. So overall on the Jets draft, they had a great draft. I think it was the best overall draft, but it should have been. They did what they were expected to do. You have three first-round picks. You are expected to have the best draft, and they did. Now listen, almost everything about the draft is a guessing game. It's all one big question mark. Nobody knows truly for sure how these prospects will pan out. You can almost find any sort of optimism around any of these picks. That's why I don't have a list of teams that lost the draft. Yeah, I know. I don't have a list of teams that I thought lost the drafts because it's nearly impossible to know for sure who lost or even who won the draft until these players hit the field and play in a real NFL game. But that doesn't mean that there wasn't a team that led the draft in head scratchers. That team would be none other than the New England Patriots. The Patriots led the NFL in head scratchers this weekend. Like I said on This Just In with Justin Marville on Monday night, all I hear from the media and from Patriots fans who are blowing this off like it's no big deal is they tell me, well, Peyton, don't question Bill Belichick. My response to that is, why? No, I'm going to question the man because every single draft pick that the Patriots made this year just made me go, what? Also, it's not like Bill Belichick is notable for being good at drafting players. The Patriots spent their first-round pick on an offensive guard from an FCS school in Chattanooga, Tennessee, a guy named Cole Strange. Now listen, Cole Strange may turn out to be a great player in the NFL. However, he wasn't projected to be drafted until the middle of the second round to the beginning of the third round. The Patriots didn't stop reaching there. They spent their second round pick on wide receiver Tyquan Thornton out of Baylor. Now, he did run the fastest 40-yard dash out of any wide receiver at the combine this year. I get it. The speed's there. However, he wasn't projected to go until the fourth round. He wasn't projected to be drafted until day three. And the Patriots drafted him at the beginning of day two. Then on top of that, they spent two picks on running backs despite already having a crowded backfield. And they spent a fourth round pick on a quarterback. They drafted Bailey Zappe out of Western Kentucky. A guy who has a noodle for an arm, is not physically talented, and was probably going to go undrafted if the Patriots had not drafted him. Also, not to mention, they don't even need a quarterback because they spent a first-round pick on Mac Jones last year. And Mac Jones made the Pro Bowl, so it's not like they'd be looking to replace him, right? The Patriots seemingly decided to throw away the concept of value in the draft this year and decided their strategy was to unreasonably reach for players and draft players that play positions that they don't even need. All right, guys, it is time to bring on my man, Dwayne Marcus, host of Goat Talk with Marcus. Welcome in, Marcus. How you doing today?
I'm doing good, man. It's an early morning, but I'm doing good. It's nice to be here.
Yeah, man. I'm happy you're here. I'm glad to have you on. Listen, I'm sure you've heard I've been ranting about the NFL draft all morning. Yeah. So I kind of want to put that aside for a second and ask you about these NBA playoffs, which have been incredible so far. I want to start off with the series between the Bucks and the Celtics, because game one, the Bucks handled the Celtics quite easily. And then in game two, the Celtics handled the Bucks quite easily, despite missing Marcus Smart. It was strange because I felt like game one and game two felt like the same exact game, but two different teams won. My question is, what do the Bucks have to do to get back on track in this series?
Well, if we're being really honest, the only reason why the Bucks won game one was because the Celtics missed a lot of threes in game one. Like, the reason why the games look exactly the same was because the Celtics took the same amount of shots. The game plan was the same. Like the Bucks are really good defensively, especially as it pertains to rim protection. When you have a guy that's won a defensive player of the year, what is it, twice now, and has been a finalist at least three of the last 4 years or something like that, you're going to be a really good rim protection team. And teams know that going against the Bucks. So they have to shoot threes. Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown, as great as they are and as great as they were in the four-game sweep against the Brooklyn Nets, they missed a lot of threes as a team individually, but also as a team in game one. In game two, they locked in. Jaylen Brown had 25 points in the first half. Jason Tatum did his part. You saw other guys also step up and hit threes. If you're going to hit threes against the Bucks, you're likely going to win. The one issue that, and one reason why that could be of issue, is because if you're avoiding driving, if you're avoiding getting physical down low, you're not going to get those fouls, which means you're not going to get those free throws. The Celtics are a solid free throw shooting team. But if you're not shooting those free throws, those points don't matter, which means then that those three-pointers that they're taking and those mid-range shots that they're taking, those shots mean a lot more because you're not driving, you're not playing physical, you're not getting down low. The Bucks just have to continue to play the way that they've been playing. Like, they've been playing physical basketball. They love the physicality. The Celtics thought that they could rattle Giannis and rattle these guys by playing physical. They can't, because the Bucks won a championship last season off of playing physical. So there's not really too much that the Bucks have to change in order to make it out of this series. I still think the Celtics can win in seven, right? There's people in the media like Nick Wright and guys like that who think that the Celtics sweeping a bad Brooklyn Nets team is leading other people to believe that they could get past the Bucks. And while you could make that argument, listen, the Bucks don't have their second best player on the floor in Chris Middleton, who is their closer, which means that you're going to be relying a lot on Bobby Portis and Grayson Allen and Pat Connaughton and Dante DiVincenzo and guys like that to step up in big moments, and Jrue Holiday as well. That's not a recipe for success, because those guys haven't consistently stepped up in big moments offensively. Jrue Holiday has defensively. He made a lot of great defensive plays in the finals last season. Offensively, not so much. The Bucks don't have to change much, but the Celtics played a really, really, really good game. They played just how they did game one, but they were just more efficient from the field. And that's really why, like you said, the games look the same, but two different teams won.
Yeah, no, I 100% agree. Listen, if Chris Middleton is supposedly out for this entire series, I think I would take the Celtics in seven. I could not agree more with you there. There was one more NBA question that I wanted to ask before getting into the NFL draft again. The question being, the Sixers totally blew their chance to steal game one in Miami. And that would have been huge, to steal a game on the road without Embiid. Harden looked horrible. I mean, James Harden looked absolutely terrible, and he has almost looked terrible ever since joining the Sixers. What is the bigger issue in Philly, the injury to Embiid or the fact that Harden is struggling immensely?
Well, I think we're overreacting a little bit with James Harden. If you look at what James Harden was doing in Houston, he was averaging about 24 shots per game or something around there, which is why he was able to shoot and score, you know, 30 some odd points seemingly every night. When he left Houston to go to Brooklyn, he ended up, that average dropped from like 24 shots to, I think, about 16 shots per game, right? Now he's only averaging 14 shots per game. Well, he took 14 shots in game one. This is the new normal, as Brian Windhorst said the other day on ESPN. Like, this is the new normal for James Harden. And here's the thing, and I talked to my guy German about stuff about sports, and that show's going to be out later today at 1 o'clock on my show. But what he said made a lot of sense. Did James Harden win any championships in Houston playing ISO ball for 20 seconds of a 24-second shot clock? No, he didn't win any championships that way. He didn't win championships jacking up 20-plus shots a game. And while it looked great, and while he solidified himself as one of the most prolific scorers in the history of the NBA, and that's fantastic for James Harden, nothing but love for him, but they didn't win any championships that way in Houston. And, you know, you can say, oh, well, there's a lack of talent, but they had Chris Paul. And we've seen Chris Paul now in Phoenix. He's led them to the finals last season, likely going to lead them to the finals again this season, unless the Grizzlies or the Warriors have anything to say about it, and what probably could be a rematch from last year's finals. Like, James Harden didn't win championships playing the way that we are used to seeing James Harden play basketball. And in the that James Harden, he's still a box office attraction. He's still an elite scorer. He's still an elite player. He is still a top 10, maybe 15 player in the league at this point in his career. There's no denying that. But as I've said several times before, it's not that James Harden is washed. It's not even that he's struggling. The role has changed. You don't need on Philly. You don't necessarily need James Harden to be going off for 30 points and 6 assists. No, what you need is for this offense to flow. And offenses don't flow if James Harden is jacking up 20, 25, 30 shots a game, because at some point, those shots, you get more and more inefficient. As we know in the playoffs, right, possessions mean more. The games slow down. The focus becomes solely on one individual player. And that's why a lot of that playoff success, they had one Western Conference Finals appearance in Houston. They never made it to the finals. They blew a 3-2 lead against the Warriors team, who was without KD for Game 6 and 7 when they could have closed out the series a couple years ago were the Rockets. So it's not so much that James Harden is struggling. This is just the new normal. The biggest issue is Joel Embiid not being there. I do still think that the Sixers have a chance to win Game 2, and they'll still be fine going into Game 3 and 4 when Joel Embiid will likely be back. But the reason why I say that it's more so Joel Embiid being injured is because the Heat can't stop Joel Embiid. They can't. No one in the NBA, I think, can stop Joel Embiid. If the Sixers can get the job done on the road, that buys Joel Embiid one more game of rest at least. If they can't, you have to play Joel Embiid in Game 3, because if you don't and you lose Game 3, you're probably not going to win this series. But you can come back from a 1-1 lead, obviously, because it's just deadlock, best 3 of 5 at that point. So I'm going to say the bigger issue is Joel Embiid being hurt. I don't think that James Harden is struggling. I think we just have to adapt to the fact that this is the new normal. Like, this is what we're going to see. We're going to have to get used to seeing a 20-10 guy. He's been averaging 22 points, 10 assists since he joined Philly. That's the new normal for James Harden. And whether we like it or not, we're going to just have to get used to it.
Yeah, that's good right there. I mean, personally, I think Harden does want to be more of a facilitator. I think we saw that kind of shift when he went to Brooklyn. However, for whatever reason, it's not working in Philly, though. I feel like the offense isn't flowing the way that he would want it to as the facilitator. And I think that Embiid being injured is definitely a bigger deal than Harden not stepping up to the plate. But I think it's weird because he should be the second best player on the team. However, when Embiid is out, he plays like the third option. It looked like Tyrese Maxey and Tobias Harris were both playing and filling the role of Embiid's absence more than James Harden was. I just wanted to see him be a little bit more aggressive. I believe he only took about like 15 shots. I think he only took five shots in the second half and only scored 4 points, which is when it matters the most. You really need to turn it on in the second half. You see the Grizzlies do that all the time. Ja Morant really turns it on in the fourth quarter. I think yesterday they went on like a 15-6 run to close out the quarter. The Grizzlies did, and Ja Morant scored. He scored all 15 of those points. That's what I would expect out of a guy that it should be the second best option on the team, but now that your best player's out, is the first best option. I'm going to get more into my thoughts on James Harden later. I do have him, spoiler alert, I do have him on my biggest losers of the week list. But now let's get into the NFL draft. This was certainly a draft to remember. It was just as unpredictable as we all thought that it would be. And there was a lot of surprises, including only one quarterback being selected in the first two rounds. And the number one overall pick was even a surprise to some. And there was plenty others on top of that. But for you, Marcus, what was the biggest surprise to you during the draft?
To me, maybe I'm in the minority here, Bill Belichick drafting a guy that should have gone in the third round is not a surprise to me, because if you look at back at these drafts, you're hard pressed to find a Bill Belichick draft in the last 20 years that was higher than a C+, if we're being honest. And as Bart Scott said on First Take the other day, the reason why it worked was because, well, you had Tom Brady there, so it didn't really matter because he's the greatest quarterback of all time. The biggest head scratcher, and I won't let my personal bias flood me here because I have my own opinions about the Packers draft. I think the biggest head scratcher was Jermaine Johnson and N'Kobe Dean falling as much as they did, more so N'Kobe Dean than Jermaine Johnson. Like, I understand they both have the injury history, but for the Jets to get Jermaine Johnson at 26, I think is fantastic. For the Eagles to get N'Kobe Dean in the third round is even better. Yes, he declined to get the surgery, and I understand that, but N'Kobe Dean was the best linebacker on his team, a championship-winning team, who, like, the Georgia Bulldogs had the best defense in college football this past season. And a lot of that has to do with what N'Kobe Dean was doing. Again, I know he declined that surgery. Those were interesting. I think the Texans drafting Derek Stingley at number 3 was also a pretty interesting pick. Not so much a head scratcher, but definitely a little like, why Stingley over Sauce Gardner? Because I think Sauce Gardner was the best D-back in the league, the best guy in the best secondary guy in the draft this season. So those were a little bit confusing. There wasn't really a pick, in my opinion, that really had me stumped. There was some frustration about the Packers making their picks at 22 with Quay Walker, and that's on like Wilson Football's Instagram if you want to see that. But outside of that, this draft, because of the depth, it's hard to really say, man, that one didn't make a lot of sense. Obviously, the one that sticks out, of course, is the Patriots drafting Strange, and there's a clip of him just getting absolutely toasted in Senior Bowl practice against a guy who got drafted in the first round, if I'm not mistaken, this season. So that's probably the biggest one. But again, like I said, Bill Belichick hasn't given us the best drafts in the last 20 years. So, I mean, what do you expect? Like, Bill Belichick hasn't done the best there. So when you got a lot of depth at a lot of these different positions, it's hard to find a bad pick. Overall, there were definitely some confusing ones that, I mean, like you said, we'll just have to wait and see how all these guys pan out once the season and their careers progress.
Yeah, I mean, it's always hard to say a pick was a bad pick, because at the end of the day, any of these guys can pan out and any of these guys can be busts. You know what I mean? Yep. So it's like I said earlier, you're going to have to wait until these guys kind of get on the field. But there were certainly a lot of head scratchers, mainly out of New England, in my opinion.
Yes.
And like you said, I don't even know why I'm surprised, because Bill Belichick has not been good at drafting. While he is probably the greatest coach in the history of the game, he is not, and by far not, the greatest general manager in the history of the game. No, not at all.
Not at all.
And now I had another question. What are the biggest winners? Because we already talked about, I went into my biggest winners and biggest losers of this draft. Who are your biggest winners of the draft?
The biggest winner of the draft to me has to be the Eagles. To get a guy in A.J. Brown, who is, I think, if you're talking about guys who are entering now their fourth year receiver, the big three, Terry McLaurin, A.J. Brown, and DK Metcalf, like say what you want. I think A.J. Brown is the best of those three. I love Terry McLaurin. I love DK Metcalf even more. But A.J. Brown, as far as just what he can do for you, I think he's a fantastic route runner. He can go get pretty much there's not a route A.J. Brown can't run. And that's rare in the NFL. He's physical. He can be a deep ball threat. He can give you the medium. He can give you the short route. To get a guy like that, in a pass happy league, as you mentioned earlier in the show before I came on, to get a guy like that for a first and a third round pick is just highway robbery, in my opinion. Like, A.J. Brown is a top 10 receiver in the NFL, in my opinion, right now. And what the Eagles have done is they've taken away all excuses. Like, we like to trash the NFC East so very much because of how abysmal and how god-awful they are. And that is a god-awful division. Don't get me wrong. It seems like every season there's a new team that can win the division, and it's not because they're getting better. It's because they're all just not that great. But for the Eagles to get a guy in A.J. Brown, so now you have a pose from him, Devontae Smith. You do still have Dallas Gardner. You have an offensive line. It's old, but it's serviceable. It was a top 10, 15 offensive line in the league last season, if I'm not mistaken. You have a decent backfield with your Byron Scott and your Miles Sanders. The defense is getting better, right? But then you've got Jalen Hurts. And last year with this team, with that team last year, as young and as inexperienced with a rookie head coach, that team made it to the NFC playoffs. That team in a bad division went against the defending Super Bowl champion at the time, Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And if it weren't for just bad decisions here and there in the first half and a little bit in the third quarter, the Eagles probably could have won that game against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. I had the Eagles on upset watch for the Buccaneers because of the talent. Jalen Hurts is talented. The Eagles have gotten to a point where they are sick of having this quarterback confusion, right? Carson Wentz, he had that really great season when they won the Super Bowl, and then that's pretty much it. Jalen Hurts no longer has the excuses, as you mentioned earlier. You have A.J. Brown. You've got Devontae Smith. You have a reliable tight end. You have a decent O-line. You've got a reliable backfield. You have a defense that can get the job done to the best of their ability when they need to. There's no reason why the Eagles can't be back in the playoffs this season. And I think the Eagles can make it back to the playoffs this season with a winning record. Again, like, the Eagles absolutely won the draft overall because of the moves that they made. As far as who actually won the draft, if we're looking specifically at just the draft picks, it's the Jets. Like you said, when you have three first-round picks, it's hard to lose the draft, quote unquote, because you have so many. Like, you got to hit. And they didn't just hit. I think they hit a home run with their draft picks. You get Gardner, Sauce Gardner. You've got Garrett Wilson. You bring in Jermaine Johnson. Like, they were phenomenal. Even if you look at the second round, they brought in Breece Hall, right? This is a guy and Robert Saleh, who's, while he's a defensive-minded head coach, he does still come from that Kyle Shanahan coaching tree. And we know what they like to do offensively. They like to do running back by committee, they like to cut the field in half, give you a lot of RPOs and things like that. The Jets are going to be, I think, one of the more fun teams to watch because they're all very young. They have nothing to lose. They won four games last season. I think they'll match that this season. Zach Wilson, 9 touchdowns last season, 11 interceptions. He has more weapons. He has a better offensive line now. They drafted offensive linemen. They got better defensively. Like, the Jets are building, and they're building with what they can do. And it's working. They're not just throwing mud at the wall and seeing what sticks per se. They're actually making good decisions. And if you're a Jets fan, you have to love that, because for a long time, the Jets were making some questionable decisions when it came time for draft day. The Jets fans used to dread draft day and draft week. And now I think they're going to look forward to it. The Jets absolutely won it with their picks, but the Eagles getting A.J. Brown for a first round pick and a third round pick is just highway robbery. And you're able to lock him in for 4 more years. The Eagles, in my opinion, absolutely won the draft overall.
Okay, yeah, that I'm with you on that. Listen, you want to give your young quarterback as little excuses as possible as to why he didn't do well when it comes to contract negotiation time, because that's what the Browns did with Baker Mayfield. They gave him a good O-line. They gave him good wide receivers. They gave him a great running game. They gave him a coach that won Coach of the Year, and then Baker Mayfield managed to miss the playoffs the year after. It looked like they were trending upwards. So now the contract year comes around, they say, no, we can spend our draft picks on Deshaun Watson and upgrade our quarterback. I think the Eagles don't want to be in a situation where Jalen Hurts has excuses when it comes to contract negotiations. They want to know whether or not he is their guy for sure. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And the Jets, they have bought into a system since hiring Robert Saleh that I believe is heading right on the direction. And it was much like the Browns did as they rebuilt from that 0-16 team. Everything was super dysfunctional. They bring in a new regime, and it kind of sets everything a little bit right back on track. I absolutely love what the Jets are doing. Like you said, I think they hit home runs with all three of their top draft picks. And the Eagles, through trades on draft day, made their team maybe even the best team in that division if everyone does improve.
You can make, given what we've seen with the Cowboys, with Cedric Wilson not coming back, which is, like, say what you want, that's massive. With Amari Cooper going to your Cleveland Browns, that's massive. They didn't, if I'm not mistaken, they didn't address the need at wide receiver. So unless they're holding out for Deebo, but we know Jerry Jones, he's not that guy. On paper, the Philadelphia Eagles, if everything goes the way they expect it to, if Jalen Hurts continues to improve, because here's the thing, Jalen Hurts has all the intangibles. The one, my personal only knock on Jalen Hurts, and we saw that on full display in the playoff game against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, was decision-making. That only gets better with time. Like, that only gets better the more and more you play the game, the more and more you are able to understand defenses, the more and more you connect with your wide receivers. The Eagles have put Jalen Hurts and the Philadelphia Eagles in a position where they can win the NFC East this year. Now, that doesn't mean a lot, because this has notoriously been one of the worst divisions in football the last couple of years. And they haven't had a repeat division winner, if I'm not mistaken, since the divisions realigned in 2002, which was before I was born. But if all things goes as according to plan, the Eagles can be competitive in the NFC East this season, in the NFC this season, a wide open NFC East. Like, you really, like, once you get past my Packers, Tom Brady and the Bucks, now that he's back, and the defending champion Rams, I don't want to hear anything about the Cardinals. I don't want to hear anything about the Vikings. And that's not just my Packer bias. That's just me being serious. I don't want to hear anything about the Vikings. I definitely don't want to hear anything about the Cowboys. Like, the Eagles have put themselves in a position to make a return trip to the playoffs. And I said last season, I'm going to say it again this season, and I'm going to take it a step further. Last season, I said, if all things goes to plan, Jalen Hurts will 100% be a Jimmy Garoppolo type of quarterback by the end of this season, which is top 15 to 20. If all things go according to plan this season, given what they have now with A.J. Brown and Devontae Smith and all the moves that we've already talked about, if Jalen Hurts continues to improve, if he continues to get better, if he gets better with those decisions, turns the ball over less, continues to be dynamic both through the air and on the ground, there's no reason why at the end of this season, Jalen Hurts isn't a top 12 quarterback, maybe even a top 10 quarterback in the NFL already, because he has the talent. The talent's there. Now he's just got to get the decision-making together. And Jalen Hurts can lead the Philadelphia Eagles to a division win. And that would be massive, 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 because the Giants aren't improving, but they're still going to be in a quarterback purgatory because they're not bringing back Daniel Jones. So that's still an issue. The Commanders or the football team or whatever bad names all around you want to call them, they're also in QB purgatory, in my opinion. And the Cowboys are the Cowboys. They're going to continue to find a way to get in their own way. The Philadelphia Eagles are set. There's no confusion heading into this season, which means there are no excuses heading into this season, not for the coach, not for the GM, and especially not for Jalen Hurts. Jalen Hurts has the potential to cement himself as a top 12 QB in the NFL when this season's done, and that starts by winning the division and winning a potentially, depending on how the matchups go, winning a playoff game with the Philadelphia Eagles, which is going to endear himself even more to a Philadelphia fan base that we know with Ben Simmons will crucify you the second you don't step up in big moments. Jalen Hurts is coming from Oklahoma. He also went to Alabama. Like, he's got the big-time genes in him. He has no excuses. I'm excited to watch Philadelphia Eagle football because of what they've done with the draft.
Yeah, it's definitely going to be a lot of fun to see how that division pans out, because even though it's horrible every single year, it's always contested every single year. But I do now, like you said, on paper – the Eagles have the best team going into this season in that division, mainly because there was very little turnaround. They didn't lose as much as they gained. The Cowboys lost more than they gained. The Commanders, they kind of lost more than they gained because they decided to roll with Carson Wentz as their quarterback, which is a loss in itself. And the Giants are going to be in a nightmare situation with Daniel Jones if he does actually perform this year, because then they're going to be in a whole contract situation. But I doubt he's going to perform, because Daniel Jones has never performed throughout his entire career in the NFL. So that division is wide open. I think the Eagles noticed that and they took advantage of it, which is brilliant and great on their part. But now, with every winner, there is a loser. So in your opinion, what team had the worst draft overall, like a collective unit, maybe not the most surprising or head-scratching draft, but just the worst draft?
Given the press conference that he gave the other day, the Titans 100% lost this draft. Like, and it's not just because they traded away A.J. Brown, who I've already talked about. You draft Malik Willis, who obviously there comes a day when you have to draft a quarterback. You have to. I think, personally, I was a little surprised to see Malik Willis fall to third round. I thought he'd get picked up in the second round. I'm not at all surprised that he didn't go in the first round. I'm a little bit surprised to see they didn't go in the second round. But Malik Willis is a talented quarterback. Look, we said it all offseason. There are no franchise guys on paper in this draft. That's 100% correct. But we also said that about Mac Jones last year. And Mac Jones got drafted to the best situation possible of all the guys that got drafted at the quarterback position last season. And he was able to produce. He was a Pro Bowler, and he made it to the playoffs this season. No other rookie quarterback could say that. Malik Willis found himself in a position where he's got the best running back in football. He has a solid defense. He has a really good O-line. But they traded away A.J. Brown. And if you knew you were going to draft Malik Willis, why did you trade away A.J. Brown? Now, I know they replaced A.J. Brown with Treylon Burks, but there's no guarantee that Treylon Burks pans out on this level. So you've traded a guy that you know can produce, who only had a bad season last season because of injury, That's the only reason why AJ Brown had a bad season last season was because of injury. You traded away that guy, got basically nothing in return, and you drafted a quarterback who is on your roster, and your starting quarterback right now, and Ryan Tannehill, is already on record as saying he has no interest in mentoring Malik Willis. Now, from a competitive standpoint, you get it, right? Ryan Tannehill has a family. I'm sure he has kids. I think he does. Like, he has things he needs to do for his, this is how he pays his bills. I get that. But if your veteran quarterback right now is not interested in mentoring your guy for the future, then Malik Willis can't turn into that franchise guy that maybe the Titans think that he is. And if he doesn't have a reliable running a wide receiver to throw the ball to, he definitely can't turn into a franchise guy that the Titans may think he is. So the Titans absolutely, I think, lost the draft. Outside of the Titans, I've been really hard on my Packers, right? I heard you on this, Justin, this past Monday say that you're actually not as low on the Packers draft as some of us in Packers Nation are. And I understand that, right? Heat of the moment, I was a little bit upset about that. I've had some sleeps now to think about it. I'm not as upset at the draft as I once was. But the Titans, hands down, I don't even think it's a debate. And it's not because of the picks, because there's talent. But you drafted a quarterback that your starting guy doesn't want to mentor him, and you gave away a top 10 wide receiver in the league for next to nothing. Next to nothing. A first and a third round pick. That's nothing. Nothing for the future. You didn't get a player off the Eagles in return. A first in a third round pick. They got fleeced. That is really, 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 really bad for the Tennessee Titans, a team that started the most players ever in the history of football over the course of a season, still had the one seed last season without Derrick Henry missing half the, season. They had the coach of the year, and now in an AFC South division that now has Matt Ryan with the Colts, a team that they've got the Jaguars, are the Jaguars going to be competitive in the AFC South? No. But the Colts, I've always said, are a quarterback away. They got Matt Ryan. And say what you want about Matt Ryan, he is better than Carson Wentz. He's better than most guys available out there right now. The Colts, because of what the Titans did, I think are now even more equipped to win the division this season when they should have won it last season. The Titans, though, their stock, not just in their division, not even just in their conference, their stock in the NFL dropped drastically because of what they did this past weekend, and it's gonna be hard to justify it if 3, 5, 7, 10 years down the line Treylon Burks doesn't pan out and Malik Willis doesn't pan out because of Ryan Tannehill's refusal to mentor him. You talk about puzzling. The Titans had a puzzling weekend.
Yeah, they certainly did. I mean, I think there was kind of rumblings about AJ Brown and his contract dispute with them, and maybe it could end up in a possible trade request. But the trade kind of just blew up and came out of nowhere. Now, They did replace him with Treylon Burks, who actually his comp was, ironically, A.J. Brown. But even the current quarterback, Ryan Tannehill, who had that press conference yesterday where he certainly said a lot of interesting things, he said that he thought that when they traded A.J. Brown that it was just a dream. It was just a bad dream. It was just a nightmare. But it wasn't. It was real life. So when the current quarterback is still saying, we shouldn't have gotten rid of this guy because he is that good, you certainly made a little bit of a maybe mistake in not paying him, because I think the emergence of A.J. Brown kind of helped that offense become actually worth mentioning in the passing game, because outside of A.J. Brown, they had no one worth mentioning at wide receiver. Now, last year, I get it, they had Julio, but is Julio worth mentioning anymore? Like, let's be honest. I don't really think that he is. I don't even think, if I'm not mistaken, he didn't catch a touchdown pass in the regular season as the supposed number two option on that Tennessee Titans offense. So he was carrying that receiver group, and you decided to trade him away and take a risk on a rookie first-round pick, which, listen, it might work out, but there's no way that he's going to be better than A.J. Brown in the next 5 years, because A.J. Brown is so fantastic. So now you're giving him one big shoes to fill and high expectations, which is just a terrible situation for a rookie wide receiver, a rookie of any position to come into. But certainly it was an interesting weekend, and an interesting week in all of sports, really, with between NBA and the NFL draft. thank you again, Marcus, for coming on the show, man. I really appreciate it. Please make sure to tell the audience where to find you and what you do, and if you've got anything coming up next.
Yeah, first of all, it's always a pleasure to work with you. Thank you for having me on the show. You can find me at Go Talk with Marcus just about everywhere. GTP Marcus, Instagram, Twitter, TikTok. Go Talk with Marcus, as it's shown right there on the banner. Spotify, Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, YouTube. Got a show coming out in about an hour and a half. Or recap the 76ers Raptors first round series with my guy Jeremy, stuff about sports. So please go ahead on all those platforms, give that a listen. Peyton's been on the show twice in the past couple days to do similar recaps like that. Those are all on my channel. Peyton will be back at some point a couple times before the NFL offseason is over. One to talk about his Browns, but also maybe to talk about some other things as we progress through the NBA playoffs as well. Trying to get to 100 subscribers by the end of the month. So if you guys could definitely smash that subscribe button, that'd be great. But yeah, Peyton, thank you for having me on the show. I greatly appreciate it. I can't wait to do it again sometime.
Okay, yeah, man. No, it's a pleasure having you on, as always, man. We'll keep in touch. Have a good one, man.
You too, man. All
right. Yeah, man, he's a great guy, man. I love working with Marcus. Please make sure to check him out and show him all the love in the world. He works his butt off to consistently post content for his viewers. He's a guy who, like he mentioned, I've been working with a lot in these past few weeks since I've returned to the podcast game. So make sure to check him out and show him some love. The link to his show will be in the description below, so make sure to check on it and show him all the love in the world possible. All right, now it's time for the closing segment. Same as last week, biggest winners and biggest losers of the week. This week, let's start off with the winners. I've got four winners and four losers, so let's go. Starting off in the winners section, I have Ja Morant. Ja Morant was the biggest winner, or the fifth biggest winner. Hold on, man. I'm having a whole episode. I'm trying to do this graphic stuff and talk at the same time. My multitasking brain is not working right now. Ja Morant had one of the biggest wins throughout all of the NBA last night. Sure, listen, this week earlier, the Grizzlies did lose game one, but not because of Ja. He scored 32 points in that game. And many questioned, including myself, if the Grizzlies had what it took to bounce back after that tough loss in game one. Why? Because there was a lot of things that went the Grizzlies' way, a lot of calls that went the Grizzlies' way, and Jaren Jackson had a career night, Ja Morant had 30 points, and they still, despite Draymond Green getting ejected, despite getting all the calls towards the end of the game, they still managed to lose the game. And I was like, wow, this might be bad. This might have a snowball effect for the rest of the series, and the Warriors might run away with this one after stealing game one. However, Ja Morant did not prove those doubters to be correct. Ja Morant in game two by himself put the team on his back and won the game. And when I say by himself, I mean it. Ja was the only Grizzly to score over 15 points in game two. Morant had 47 points, and none of his other teammates had 15 points. Not only did he have 47 points, he hit the go-ahead shot late in the fourth and also hit the clutch free throws at the end of the game to seal the victory for the Grizzlies. The Grizzlies were down by 4 points with 4 minutes left. The rest of the quarter, I mentioned this earlier, they outscored the Warriors 15-6. And guess what? Ja Morant scored all 15 of those Grizzlies points. That's the true definition of putting the team on your back. The only reason this doesn't belong higher on this list is because the series is not over yet. It's still tied at 1 apiece. And in the wise words of the late Kobe Bryant, job's not finished. Now, at number three on the biggest winners of the week, I have New York football fans. If you are a fan of a New York football team, not including the Bills, but yes, including the Bills, actually, you have a reason to be excited after long droughts of having no reason to be excited. If you're a Giants fan, you have so much to be excited about, especially getting the best player in this year's draft in Kayvon Thibodeau. You also got a promising and much-needed anchor on that offensive line. Then the Jets fans, everyone is deeming your team the winners of this draft with very little contest. You heard me call them winners of the draft. You just heard Marcus call them winners of the draft and many others. Why? Because they hit home runs on all three of their first round picks, which is something that you need to do, and they got the job done. Now the question is, will they pan out, or is it going to be like the same old Jets? Only time will tell, but things are finally looking up for New York football fans. And now at number two, I have anyone that got drafted by the Jets on here. They won. They won the week. Now, listen, I know a lot of people are sitting here wondering, Peyton, the Jets suck and have sucked since before you were even born. How could anyone that got drafted to the Jets possibly be a winner? This is why.
Congratulations, brother.
That's how Robert Saleh was greeting his players that got drafted. Listen, I don't care how bad the Jets are as an organization, historically speaking, but your NFL dreams just came true. And that's how your new head coach greets you. Be right back. I'm going to go run through a brick wall for this guy. Most coaches are like, hey, buddy, pleasure to have you on the team, man. I hope you're ready to get to work. Hope you're ready to be a New York Jet. But no, not Robert Saleh. Robert Saleh, he somehow makes the most hype moment of your life even more hyped. That's a coach players are going to want to run walls through for. He's going to make those players want to go to war for him. And that's why the New York Jets are trending upwards. And that's why anyone who got drafted by the Jets got hyped up, because they probably got one of the most hyped coaches in the league, aside from Dan Campbell in Detroit, who is biting off kneecaps and stuff like that. But Robert Saleh's up there, man. Robert Saleh and Dan Campbell are like neck and neck for the most hyped coaches in the NFL. Now, listen, though, while Robert Saleh was getting every one of his new players hyped up, it was nothing compared to what NFL Network's Kyle Brandt did. Kyle Brandt got his chance to announce the Bills' third-round draft pick, the 89th overall pick. And for those who haven't heard it, this is what he did. This is what it sounded like.
Music.
Here it comes.
Here he is.
The Buffalo Bills selection.
Please, looks like one of the Steiner brothers, the pro wrestling fame.
Good morning, football. Nice Kyle Brandt.
Good evening, Las Vegas. Good evening, my brothers and sisters on the NFL Network. And good evening, Western New York. I find it perfect that the Bills are drafting in this city of luck, of chance, because you all know, and I know, the only thing in this world that can stop Josh Allen is the flip of a coin. So Mafia, mount up, and every other fan base, listen up. Chiefs fans, Raiders fans, Bengals fans, in my hands, I hold the most important pick of this entire round, because this pick is the only pick who will win the Super Bowl in his rookie year. With the 89th pick of the 2022 NFL Draft, the Super Bowl 57 champion Buffalo Bills select my man, Terrell Bernard, linebacker, Baylor. Woo!
Kyle Brandt is a guy that gets it. He had one shot, one chance to absolutely nail his announcement of this pick, and he hit a complete home run. Matter of fact, it was a grand slam, a walk-off grand slam even. He hyped up an entire fan base, and the delivery was impeccable. Zero stutter in his speech, with absolutely no script. That was purely from the heart. Then, not only that, for all of my audio listeners who didn't get to see this clip and only heard it, at the end of him announcing this pick, he just whips out the buffalo chicken wing like completely out of nowhere and just takes a huge animalistic bite out of it after giving what could have quite possibly been the greatest pick announcement of all time. Kyle Brandt hyped up an entire fan base. He didn't stutter one time. He didn't have a script. And most importantly, he didn't butcher Terrell Bernard's name. Then on top of that, just pulls out the buffalo wing and takes a gnarly bite for good measure. And that is why Kyle Brandt is this week's biggest winner. He got his chance and he hit a freaking walk-off grand slam out of the park home run with it. Now, for every winner, there is a loser, like I said earlier with Marcus. Starting off the loser list of the week, I have James Harden. Listen, after the injury to Joel Embiid, it was time for Harden to step up and take the lead role on the team. And he's done anything but that. In fact, with Embiid out, Harden is playing like the third scoring option on that team. In game one versus the Miami Heat, James Harden only attempted 13 shots in the entire game. He scored 16 points and had 9 rebounds and only 5 assists. Also, his stats in just the second half of the game alone were much, much worse than the first half. In the second half of the game, in the second half is what matters the most. The second half is what matters the most. That's where you win and that's where you lose games. And in the second half of game one, James Harden scored only 4 points while going 1-for-5 from the field. He also only had 1 assist in the second half, and to go along with that, 2 turnovers. So he was failing at scoring, and he was failing at facilitating. Harden has been a major fold for the 76ers in this year's playoffs. In fact, I'm going to say it.
You are not him. You are not him.
James Harden, you are not him. You are not him. I don't know if you used to be him, but you are definitely not him anymore. Your playoff struggles have followed you throughout your entire career. It has been a guarantee that once the playoffs come around, you're going to struggle, James Harden, and you have just proved it.
You are not him. You are not him.
You are not him, especially when it comes to playoff times. Harden is making it seem like he's making it seem like he's not even showing up to play. His impact on the court is so minimal that it's almost unnoticeable that you would see a guy that used to average 30 points per game is on the court. It is hard for them to win games. The 76ers traded for you so that if Embiid does get elbowed in the face against the Raptors and has to miss the first 2 games of this series, you can step up and hold down the fort. But guess what? Tobias Harris is holding down the fort more than you. Tyrese Maxey is holding down the fort more than you. James Harden, where are you? Please show up. Did you go to South Beach at halftime? Where did you go, James Harden? The Sixers need you, and the Sixers fans are going to start getting restless if they haven't already. Now, at number 3, I've got Baker Mayfield. One thing is for certain after this year's draft, and that is nobody wants Baker. And even players on their teams aren't interested in playing with Baker Mayfield. He's got a nearly unmovable contract, and teams don't view him as any more valuable than a quarterback that they could draft in the 3rd round this year. This is a quarterback in Baker Mayfield who is 1 year removed from winning the Browns' first playoff game in 25 years and only a few years removed from being the number 1 overall pick. It is crazy how quickly times can change in the NFL. Even teams that don't have a quarterback, like the Seahawks, they're like, nah, you know, keep Baker Mayfield. We're good over here. We don't need Baker Mayfield. They're like, listen, we'll roll with Geno Smith. We'll roll with Drew Locke. We don't want Baker. We don't want to pay him that kind of money. And guess what? We're going to be stuck in a contract extension negotiation next year for a guy that's not really that good. So listen, the Browns are going to have to end up most likely releasing Baker, and he's going to have to sign somewhere else and be the backup quarterback. I don't find Baker Mayfield a starting job this year. I don't see where he can come in and be the starting quarterback, which is not good news to him, because guess what? Backup quarterbacks don't really get Progressive commercials. That's not how it works. Hulu's going to be off the hook. Progressive's going to be off the hook. They're going to be, listen, Baker, you're on the bench. You got to do that, because we can't make a segment called On the Bench with Baker Mayfield. That's not how it's going to work. Now, at number 2, I have this guy, Ed Marinaro. You know what was so great about Kyle Brandt's pick announcement was that he found a way to be that guy. He went up there with a plan and had his moment, which was unforgettable, and left. However, this guy, Ed Marinaro, decided, you know what? I'm going to give the most awkward speech of all time and try and tell my entire life story before announcing this pick. Here's the clip.
It is crazy. We didn't have this many people when I played in the Super Bowl.
awkward silence.
You know, I got to tell you, finding a Viking purple sport coat is not easy. But I did it, and I hope you appreciate it. You know, the significance of me being here was that 50 years ago, I was drafted by the Minnesota Vikings. I know what you're thinking. I look pretty good for my age. It was a great experience. Got to play in two Super Bowls. And now, 50 years later, here I am in front of all you folks. This is really exciting for me. So as a ex-former Minnesota Viking and former head coach at Blue Mountain State, come on, we got to have some GOAT fans out there.
This is right in Charles' wheelhouse.
Go GOATs, baby. Anyway.
Is he going to get to the early?
There you go.
Read the card. She wants me to read the card.
All right. Are we in the early years?
Let's go, Ed. Here we go, Ed.
He's
getting the hook.
Not even any playoff music. Just read it. Just read it.
Anyway, with the 42nd pick in the 2022 NFL Draft, the Minnesota Vikings select defensive back Andrew Booth from Clemson.
That was so bad. That was so bad. I'm sorry. This guy probably waited like his entire life to get to be able to do this. But man, you totally butchered the moment, bro. I mean, I do want to make this clear. I shortened that clip. And I almost fell asleep during it because this guy just rambled and rambled and rambled and rambled despite getting absolutely no response from the crowd. It got so bad that for those of you that didn't see the video that are listening through audio, one of the production staff members had to walk onto the stage and tell him, hey, bud, just read the card. This literally happened. I'm not joking for those of you listening on audio. It really happened. This poor lady on the production staff had to walk on stage while this guy was just nonsensically rambling and tell him to just read the card. Everyone in the crowd watching at home were just like, one, who is this guy? And two, does he think that he's just been inducted into the Pro Football Hall of Fame? Because that's what it felt like. I think he was like ready. Like, this is my moment. I'm getting the gold jacket. Like, hey, bud, just read the card. You could be energetic. You could be lively. But man, that was one of the worst pick announcements of all time. I guess you just have to cut the losses and move on, my man. Now, the number one biggest loser of draft night was Sean McVay. You're about to hear exactly why he is the number one loser of the entire week. Here's a clip of Sean McVay's live reaction to the Patriots drafting Cole Strange in the first round. Here we go.
If that is an example, you really, really just went. Oh my, UT Chattanooga to the first round. Hey,
how about that? And we wasted our time watching him thinking he'd be at 104, hey. Maybe.
Dude, what was that? Like, what are you in? Do you need help, bro? Like, are you in pain? Like, oh my goodness, what kind of laugh was that, Sean McVay? Like, bro, you're out here making fun of another team for who they drafted, and that's the laugh you cry out? Come on, what an NPC level laugh. That was worse than the Kawhi laugh. It was worse than that. It was worse than the Kawhi laugh. I don't know how anyone can dispute that. That was like a generic laugh. Like, if I were to go on Google right now and look up like a Shutterstock video titled Man Laughing, like, out of all the laughs in the world, that's what would pop up, was that laugh right there. This one, right? That's what Sean McVay just decided to belt out. He also didn't even look like he was laughing. Like, his eyes widened as he laughed. Like, the whole thing just felt forced, and it felt robotic and awkward and weird. So there you go, Sean McVay. Sean McVay, he laughs like an NPC. And now the whole world knows it. And because of that, he earned himself a top of the list of this week's biggest losers. All right, that's going to be it for today. Thank you all so much for tuning in. Again, I'm sorry for the technical difficulties throughout the broadcast. I'm sorry if the camera production was just a little bit off today because, like I said, I'm on my backup camera right now. We started 30 minutes late. I had an issue with the graphics and just, oh my goodness, it has been a long morning. But thank you to those of you who did tune in and did stick around for the entire show. If you haven't, please make sure to like, follow, and or subscribe. And make sure to tune in next Wednesday at 10 a.m. Eastern Time. I hope you all have a wonderful week and peace out.